Sunday, July 29th, 2012, Laytown, County Meath, the National Ecology Centre, with our trusty and rusty recording system, ladies and gentlemen, The Sod Show does Sonata, Part 1. The Sod Show, it'll grow on you. Join gardener Peter Donegan and not-so-green fingers Brian Green, Fridays, 3pm, 103.2 Dublin City FM. The Sod Show, Dublin's garden radio show. The Sod Show, brought to you by Green Sacks, the compostable bags for home and garden.
Well, guys, you're very welcome to Sonarta, the Fáilte Romhaibh. Thanks to the Sod Show and all the publicity that brought about this wonderful event. We're in Sonarta here in Laytown on the estuary of the River Nanny, and we're not that far from the coast. But today we'll be looking at the centre, which is called Sonarta, which means positive strength. It's been set up by volunteers, environmentalists, people who love harmony with nature, whether that be growing or creating their own energy or rainwater harvesting. All that kind of green technology is what draws people here as volunteers and as visitors. We're not really benefiting from any state funding at the moment, so it's all very voluntary. So I hope you'll bear that in mind when you're going around. It isn't manicured within an inch of its life, but it is an organic centre as well, so we can't actually use all those sprays that sometimes can get used by various local authorities, parks departments and so forth. So another reason why we need volunteers for hoeing and weeding and helping out in different ways. Today we'll take you through the walled garden. It's a 2-acre walled garden. This originates now back in the early 1700s, at a time when the idea of importing fruit and vegetables would have been completely laughable and very impractical. So this was the garden that a pretty wealthy barrister from Dublin by the name of a Mr. Doran had the idea that he wanted. He didn't have a country house, but he wanted a country garden. And so this is nowadays a kind of a farm centre. Unusual because it isn't linked to a big house the way a lot of them are around the country. But there is Ballygarth Castle just across the river, which for many years people thought was the big house, but it is a totally different property altogether. So the walled garden is 2 acres. That's south facing, going down to the river. A beautiful working environment and a beautiful growing environment. And then you have the courtyards, which would have been for machinery, for people living. People working here would have been living in them. And then there's an old house, which was a sort of farm manager's house. And the other courtyards are now used. The one there beside us, you see the wind turbines, is used as an energy courtyard, demonstrating different kinds of renewable energy. We could do a bit of sponsorship to upgrade some of those exhibits. But it's there for the moment. We've an eco shop. These places have been rebuilt thanks to Foss from pretty much the ground up, because they were stone rubble, and they are now usable buildings as a shop with all sorts of ecological products and books and information and different things that people like to buy. And then the cafe is another part, which we'll end up in the cafe, sure, and we can exchange thoughts and impressions and have a cup as well. You all have your vouchers on you anyway, hopefully, to get the free cup when you get back. When we've left the garden, we'll go on the nature trail down by the River Nanny. That's the wilderness side of Sonarta, the wooded area up onto the Rath, 5th century Rath, which has great sort of legendary associations with Cuchulainn and Lé, his charioteer. And you can use your imagination up there as to what it would have looked like in the 5th century anyway. But sure, for the moment, the 21st century, let's start and see what we have here in Sonarta. We'll go in through the reception and take you into the first courtyard. What is is the Elements Courtyard. You can see a bit of activity today. There's a great farmer's market and craft fair on. There's even free books and bits and bobs in there as well if you want to make a donation to Sonarta. People sort of donate things and with that in mind. This Elements Courtyard, as you can see, the stone buildings around it would have been used in a very practical way going back over the centuries, but today it is really more of an awareness-raising courtyard with the elements of earth, air, fire and water represented in different kinds of stonework. Peter Donegan as a landscape gardener would love all this, I'd say, and could do loads with it if he had tons of money. but for the moment, anyway, it is what it is, and it's a beautiful, relaxing place. I do want to say one thing to you, which might need to be said, because you came in through what's this long wall, and Sonarta faces out onto the Julianstown, Laytown Road with this long wall. The road wasn't always there, you see. When this was built, it was built to face the river and to face the water. So we actually all came in the back. And the back was not part of the design when it came to building this place at the start. So it's sort of strange that you come in this big wall and then you come into this kind of idyllic, quiet courtyard. But this would have been looking towards the river. And the eco shop there, which we will take a look at and go through into the garden, is part of this courtyard as well. Those arches were just about standing when we got here. So they were built up again, and with the help of Foss and various schemes, we got roofs put on, and the place looks better than it was, I can tell you. That debris over there looks a little bit like it used to look. Right? That's how we came, how we found it. So you can imagine before and after. Right, we'll go in through the eco shop and out into the garden. I'll just stop you all here now for a second. We'll kind of take it one place at a time. You're now in the wall garden. As you can see, it's south-facing, south-sloping, and really is idyllic when it comes to being a growing environment. When we came in here first in the mid-80s, brambles, it was like something out of the Sleeping Beauty fairy tale, because brambles had gone right out into the middle of the garden. There were a couple of horses grazing, just keeping the grass down. But the old apple trees were a telltale sign that this had been a very productive garden going back over the years. So when we cleared back the brambles and revealed the walls, we got an idea of the dimensions of the place. So it's 2.2 acres and it really is an orchard with vegetables planted in it, because the trees are what are there for longer than any of us, a couple of hundred years in some cases. University College Dublin has come out to take graftings of some of the varieties are pretty old and pretty rare and go back very, very far in history. So anyway, we'll come back to the garden. Before we go around the garden though and out onto the nature trail, I want to take you into the Energy Courtyard. Now the Energy Courtyard is an Energy Courtyard now, like the Elements Courtyard, but in the day when it was built back in the 17 and 1800s, it would have been for raising a bit of meat, because there's a dovecot in there, at least what remains of a dovecot. So apart from looking at doves, they also ate them. They were tasty morsels. So we'll go in there and take a look and see what's here now.
There's not too much meat in a dove.
Well, I suppose there were pigeons, really, you know. Whatever way they look good. To be honest, in those days they used to eat blackbirds and all sorts of things, you know. But anyway, let's just take a look up here. Again, this is in need of a fair bit of upgrading, because when we started it off in the 80s, it might have been all modern then, but you really have to spend money to keep ahead of technology these days. This, for example, over here is a solar oven. And this is used by the type of thing that's used in Africa by aid agencies, where there's a lack of fuel and they want to try to encourage people not to be cutting down trees and making charcoal and use the sun and take advantage of the heat. So As you can imagine, in sunny Africa, it probably works a lot more efficiently. It's not exactly bubbling here. It won't be boiling an egg today.
Have you had that hot?
Tepid. In certain times, yeah, but it's hardly warm.
No.
It's probably been cooled by the wind as quick as it's been heated by the sun. But you get the idea anyway that the rays of the sun are concentrated on the centre where the pot is hanging.
Get Sky Movies.
Yeah, we could. You're thinking business ideas now, Ryan. Yeah, we could turn it into a satellite dish. All right, yeah, yeah. So that's the kind of thing. But again, kids love this type of thing about cycling a bike and seeing how much voltage you can. Kids of all ages, I mean. So the energy bicycles are another part. Again, trying to keep them going in the rain and all the elements is a different kettle of fish too. What's growing plants over there used to be a wave machine, where you just get to the end of it and you push this lever and you create waves, and the waves turn a turbine and it generates light that kept the lighthouse going. A mini model lighthouse. The whole mechanism thing just freezes up after a couple of years unless it's completely restored. That in the corner with the arch is what remains of the dovecot, and there's information about it inside there if you want to go around afterwards and take a look at it. But that's an original from when the place was built first. So the solar panels, the evacuated tubes, are generally seen as more efficient if you only have a small space on a roof. Because they're proud of the roof, so that the sun has a greater chance of hitting them at every angle. The flat panel one, which is on the right there, where you see on that roof, that's probably less trouble because it doesn't require the maintenance that's required on evacuated tube. So the swings and roundabouts when you're talking about technology. But it's the basis for a lot more energy demonstrations here, including the wind turbines that are above us. We'd probably need sponsorship. So if you know anybody working in Airtricity or any of these big multinational companies developing green energy, give us a shout. We might talk to them. I guess while we're here at the crop rotation sign, may as well just make a couple of points about the garden and the production side of it. It's a pretty diverse garden because it is unlike a farm or even a horticulture holding of any sort. It is growing for a market stall or market stalls. So the nature of a market stall is that the more diversity that's on a stall, generally the more interest you generate, whereas somebody growing for a supermarket is required to provide a quantity of on a continuous basis. And it's a totally different discipline to growing in this situation where you're trying to encourage diversity. Of course, the diversity ties in with the whole organic ethos, because the more diversity you have, the more wildlife in the garden, the more natural biological controls and the more predators there are for any pests that happen to think that their birthdays have come all at once when they see a crop. So you've got a rotation basically going on here. You've got potatoes you see flowering in the far corner there, just in front of the fruit trees. And then you've got the kind of brassica patch just in front of us here. And beyond in the far corner, you've got the legumes, the beans and the peas. Growing tall and proud up there, with see all the canes and the stalks and the stakes. We haven't had a good year for carrots, but I don't know anybody who has had a good year for carrots. Things like courgettes and that generally sell quite well in the markets. And like anybody with a small garden particularly, you tend to grow things that are higher value, because the guys on a large scale can grow the basic staples far more economically with the aid of machinery and large scale. But in this case, labour intensive stuff like picking of gooseberries and red currants and black currants and raspberries and courgettes That's what we do, because you get a better price for them, because labour is the biggest cost in agriculture at the moment, I would say. The polytunnel keeps us right, and we just go down that way. We have a couple of polytunnels, and that just extends the season so that we can have lettuce growing 12 months of the year, and a lot of herbs. A lot of pot plants over there as well. A lot of customers to the markets that we service in Balbriggan and in Dublin would be interested in growing their own, of course. So we're selling on trays of crops and pots of one thing and another. Herbs, of course, are very popular. So you can see the tomatoes coming on now, some ripening away. Got herbs over there. Got basil and parsley. Even the cabbages indoors during the cooler part of the year, we get a good crop. The Gavella Nero kale I see here as well, that's going to seed now.
Can you explain the pots embedded into the ground?
Yeah, those pots embedded into the ground make watering quicker and more efficient. The rooting, the roots of a tomato are so shallow that you really don't want to be washing water away from the roots if you can help it at all. So what we do is we put these plant pots into the ground, empty plant pots, which might sound a bit or look a bit strange, but when you're coming along with your hose, you fill those up, and it means you're not waiting around for the hose to water everything. You just walk off and let the water soak in its own time. So when you're short on time, it's a good idea. What I use in my own garden are upturned mineral bottles, 7-up bottles, that kind of thing. Just stick them in the ground and fill them. Anything like that works.
For those watching on radio, there's a cat and two dogs in here, and there's no hassle at all. It's amazing.
Well, Bruce the cat. this is what's called harmony in nature. You know, the lion lies down with the lamb. Wait till, famous last words. Wait till the dog spots the cat.
Deliberately don't look at it. With the tomatoes, Trevor, do you specifically do then more unusual varieties because it's a better price, or are you just growing?
We're growing a whole tomatoes? Diversity of varieties, largely because they come on at different times, so we always have something different at each week in the market. But people likewise like that, you know. They know that if they're there one week, the next week there's something different is going to be on the stand. So there's a constant interest in diversity of food. There are different varieties of tomatoes going along here now. They're not all named, so I'm not absolutely clear, but some of them are round tomatoes, some of them are the beef tomatoes, the larger ones that are different shapes. Bulb fennel. I don't know if anybody commercially is growing bulb fennel in Ireland except here. But with the polytunnel you can grow them quite easily here. But they are a Mediterranean plant, so they think they're in Italy.
It feels like it's being here on a cold day.
The red currants, birds, whatever way they their vision is, they go for red in a big way. Black currants don't seem to get bothered the same way with birds, like blackbirds and that, but the red currants they love, so we have the netting over the red currants. We have white currants as well. Now, I don't know anybody else grown white currants commercially, but they are seen in the restaurants now and again. Most of the time they'd be imported, but they are very decorative. They used to be very popular in Victorian times. In fact, they were more popular than red or black currants, but food fashions change like everything else. There's a good crop of rhubarb. It wasn't a great year for rhubarb now, but we seem to manage. Composting is a big part of growing here, as you can imagine.
Horses or donkeys or something on site for that, or
it's mainly vegetable compost. It's just everything that's not needed in the garden is composted.
And you turn it then at intervals, or just
we'd have about three bays, but to be honest, it works itself. Turning it just speeds it up. This started off. This was again a legacy of a FOSS project where you had a suburban garden, and the idea was to demonstrate in your suburban garden what you could grow. And this is what happens when you neglect a suburban garden.
I know.
Which is another demonstration. So.
It's looking very similar to yours now, Brian, is it?
It's called biodiversity.
Exactly, yes. It's encouraging lots of wildlife. Yes, indeed. Brian has the buzzwords. So when you have flower beds in a garden like this, you see, it's two cosmetics that call them flower beds. You call them bug banks, because they are encouraging a diversity of predators. Beetle banks, some people call them as well.
You say encouraging, you're not at war with them, you're encouraging them.
No, we're trying to establish a balance in nature so that it reflects the balance which keeps a check on predators, which have evolved over the years to have big populations on the basis that there's going to be a predator around that's going to take a good percentage of those before they reach adulthood even. And if you take off those predators, well, then it's bonanza day for those pests, you know.
So if you have an area dedicated to attracting them, other areas who you'd least like to have them will be left alone?
Well, that's another way of looking at things like slugs, that, you know, you leave certain areas that are what they call sort of sacrificial plants. And if the slugs like those, well, then they concentrate on those and leave the things you're trying to grow and sell free. So it's about understanding how animals work as well as plants if you want to be a good horticulturalist. But it's a fascinating study to get into the mind of a mollusk, you know. So we'll keep going because we have the nature trail just through. If this gate is still open, I'll get through it. Otherwise, we have a plan B. Yeah, there's a separate lease agreement for this nature trail. The walled area is the main core of Sonarta. A different person owns this field, and sort of by a generous gesture, we're allowed to take the boundary of the field as a nature trail.
And is the plan then for Sonarta then for you to do then organic meat?
I don't think so. No, this is a vegetarian centre generally. I mean, we generally manage, because when you bring animals into it, you're talking 24 hours and a lot of more supervision. And it makes it more difficult to operate it as a volunteer centre. So it's just too much trouble, really.
Would you do bees?
Yeah, we were talking to beekeepers now, but again, that's sort of a separate thing. Those beekeepers would look after their bees, and that's the way it has to be. I'm a beekeeper myself now, but I have enough to be doing my own hives. Some more local beekeeper, if they're listening, please come and talk to us. Anyway, you can see the salt marsh here, which is the estuary, really, of the River Nanny. And I just wanted to give you something that is interesting to me anyway. The River Nanny has a kind of a benign, cosy, cuddly kind of a feel to it when you think about what you think about when you think of the word nanny. But in fact, this is a very dangerous river in terms of history because it has flooded this area quite extensively from year to year. And the word nanny is a corruption of the Irish word, which is the opposite of a servant. Gael being a servant, anagael, is the opposite of a servant. So in a way you could say this is the destroyer. This river has got the name of being a destructive river. That's if you happen to live here. If you happen to be part of the wildlife, it's probably all part of your cycle of life. But as a river, it does flood. And the Ninch, which we are standing on, this townland is called Ninch West. And the Ninch means the flood plain. So once you understand the Irish origins of the place names, it all is very logical, as opposed to saying there's a funny place called Ninch and a funny funny river called Nanny. They actually make sense when you understand the Irish origins.
You don't need bylaws to tell you, you know, this place might flood or...
Yeah, no, exactly. No, the place name tells you that it is a floodplain. So if you're going to build here, it's on your own head, be it. So that's why the river is a bit, the house is a bit up off on the high ground there. You won't get a housing estate just right here, that's for sure. For love nor money. And as you can see, the gateposts that are ahead of us here, that is a telltale sign, a reminder that the place was built with the river in mind, because that is the entrance to this house and the farm centre, going back into the 1700s and 1800s. and you'll see a gate, a sign on the gate saying that this is the entrance gates. The river had a roadway along by the side, and that was the approach here. So the road we came in is very much a recent development. So there we are, fairly impressive gate posts, well, at least thick stone built, cut stone gate posts. And the plaque here says this is the original entrance to Ninch House West, circa 1760. A cobbled drive led along the River Nanny to the main road. So that's no longer a cobbled drive, as you can see, because the river has encroached on it, as is her wont. So we go on up the hill, and this will be a little bit of a climb, but gentle enough, I hope. And it will take us all the way, first of all, down to the river, where we look across at the Ballygarth Castle, a couple of stories about that. And then up, there's a bird hide down there, which I think was visited by some antisocial elements, shall we say. But I know it was a bit broken up a bit, but I haven't seen the evidence, so this is now the first time.
Tune in next week to part two to see how the birdwatch survived. Or did it? 103.2 Dublin City FM, The Sod Show. And we're brought to you in association with Greensacks compostable bags for home and garden. Check them out at greensacks.ie. Additional voices in today's recording from Peter Donegan, Gareth Austin, and the Garden Group, who visited along with the Sod Show to Sonarta. Our thanks to our guide, Trevor Sargent. More from Sonarta in part two next Friday at 3 p.m. here on Dublin City FM. If you want to get in touch, we're at Sod Show on Twitter. You can check out our new website, sodshow.com, which has got all the details and back shows and photographs and stuff. And you can also get the podcast via iTunes, and it's also on the website there at sodshow.com. Our thanks to you, as always, for listening to The Sod Show. And if you have any questions or if you have any ideas for the show, well, why not get in touch and drop us a line. Until next Friday at 3 p.m, have a great gardening week. Bye-bye. I bet you wonder how I knew about your plans to make me blue with some other guy. How much longer would you be my baby?